What's up, everybody? Welcome to a special Saturday afternoon edition of Slug Club Radio. This is the first time we've met and recorded before the hours of like 7 p.m.
Yeah. First time in the daylight.
I know.
I was going to say, I haven't seen y'all in the daylight in years.
Do with that what you will. But we had this lofty idea that we were just like going to get together and... Because it's time to do the, like, movie, not review, but just kind of, like, talk about the film adaptation of Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. And so the idea was that we would, like, get together fairly early and do, like, a dinner and movie night. And then we, like, I think we paused the movie. First off, we were a little bit late getting together and starting the movie, which is just kind of natural because you talk and get dinner ready and all that kind of stuff.
And we were all 30. Well, Will and I were 30 minutes late.
I was not late. I was not late. I live there. But I think had an idea that we would like start the movie at like 5:30 p.m. Also, on my part, I guess I just told myself that because it's the shortest book, like the movie, and this could have been solved by an easy Google search, that it was like sub 2 hours.
I was thinking an hour 45.
I thought it was going to be like an hour 51 or something like that.
Yeah.
And I pull up the movie like when we got sat down, and I was like, oh, this is 2 hours and 35 minutes long.
Yeah.
And at that point, you know, we were had a late start. So at that point, it was like 6 or 6:15. And I was like, okay, by the time we finish this movie, it's going to be 9. And then we have to record, which is normally like a 2-hour situation. So we just like punted to the next day. So here we are. We watched the movie last night together. We had talked about doing – I say we had talked. I posed the idea of just like doing a live review of the movie, like just us talking with it in the background.
I think that would have been hilarious.
It would have been hilarious. Maybe that'll be like for the next one we can do that, and it could just be like a Patreon episode.
Yeah.
For people that really care.
Patreon.
Yeah, like
set something up?
A Patreon exclusive.
Can we have that?
Yeah.
It would just be our parents.
Yeah.
But they got the money.
Yeah.
So that's great.
If Holly or Kay are willing to pitch in like $5 a month to support us, we will live record us talking about the adaptation of Chamber of Secrets.
We'll just offset the cookie budget.
Yeah, because, Lord, we have spent an absurd amount of money on cookie and cookie-related products.
Way more than we've taken in, that's for sure.
It's worth it, though. It's the only expense we have as a show. And if you're only going to have one expense, let it be... cookies.
I'm with you.
That's actually, just do that in life.
If you only have one expense in life,
make it cookies.
Let it be cookies. Yeah. I'm with you.
I'm gonna do a cover of John Lennon's Let It Be, but somehow work cookies into it.
I was hearing it in my head.
Just let it be, and then have it go cookies.
Who does the Let It Be Me song?
Ray LaMontagne.
Yeah. That's where I was going.
Yeah. I said John Lennon, but yeah. It is a Beatles song, right? Yeah.
It is a Beatles song.
Is he the one when that's married to Chrissy Teigen?
Yes. Yep.
No, that's all of me. That's John Legend.
Have you seen their child? Not that you would have, but
no.
I think they have a couple, but they have a son, and it looks like somebody literally just shrunk John Legend.
Yeah, he's like a tiny John Legend.
Yeah. Weird. Yeah, he's got his hair, like the like tight wavy curls, and then the same skin tone. I saw a picture the other day. Hold on. I'm going to use your phone, Evan, because I have to find it. I hope I can find it. Y'all talk while I try to find this, because it's really funny. or don't.
I mean, you know. Our Harry Potter podcast has already been derailed the first four
No, because it was just so funny.
Found this one.
Oh, here it is. So, there's like this picture. I think it was for the Grammys, because they did it remotely. So a lot of people like video conferenced in, and like John, I don't think John Legend was up for anything this year, but they had just a lot of stars. So like John Legend would normally be at the Grammys.
Yeah, sure.
So they like, there's this picture, and I'll try to like explain visually to our listeners. Will, there's the picture.
John Legend is wearing a Kung Fu outfit.
Yeah, he looks like he's wearing it's a kimono. It's a Versace kimono, and it's got like gold filigree and all these other kinds of things.
What a phrase, Versace kimono.
Right. Things I never thought I'd hear.
I'm pretty sure that's a rap song, Versace kimono.
It's probably not, it should be.
Dibs on Versace kimono. Chrissy Teigen, so they're in like the bonus room, what I would equate to the bonus room of their house, okay? Yeah. And Chrissy Teigen
the
is
one
like
bonus room. They probably have
yeah, their yeah, just the one. Chrissy Teigen's in like this beautiful gown or whatever. She's got a clutch for some reason, even though they're definitely at home because John Legend is not wearing shoes.
So well, he's
they're definitely just at home. Yeah, he had a judo tournament right after the Grammys.
I'm telling you, that dude just came from like a judo class. Yeah, with his kids.
Yeah, he just got his orange belt previously to coming on the Grammys. So that's part of the picture. The best part of the picture, however, is that John Legend's
oh my gosh, that's terrifying.
John Legend's son is just in the corner of the room. There's like a so the roof like slants down, so there's like a corner almost like if you I'll show you because you're gonna love it more than Evan will, I think, because there's a corner. It's like if you finished out an attic, so there's like corners of the room that where the roof will slant down, obviously, so there's like a little pocket of negative space where you can't like put anything.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like a useless part of the room, and John Legend's son is just in the background of this photo, just squatted down
wearing pajamas. It looks like
he's wearing Lightning McQueen pajamas and sweatpants. So that's it's all it's so great, it's so awesome. He's just behind a house plant, squatting in the room. Like, when can this be done so I can go back to watching Cars?
Like, he was playing Wii before this, and he's like, "Oh my gosh, get out!"
Because she was like, "Can you turn the game off, honey? Mommy and Daddy have to go to the Grammys."
It's so funny that he's in the picture, but they didn't like pose him in the picture at all. He's just like shoved in the corner.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like a very Chrissy Teigen thing, though. Chrissy Teigen's actually pretty hilarious.
Also, that they didn't just crop him out. Like, no, yeah. Just do that.
Yeah, you could have just done
right
that.
There.
No.
Just make it a little.
But that's
smaller.
What I'm saying. I think Chrissy Teigen was probably like, you know what, just leave him. He looks like he definitely just got a firm talking to. Like, he was in the foreground, and then he got yelled at because they had to get the picture for the Grammys. And so they were like, honey, just go over there. And he just squatted.
Why is Chrissy Teigen wearing a clutch? That's a great question.
Well, I mean, I don't know. She may have needed her chapstick to go from the kitchen up to the bonus room for the Grammys.
I'm sure somebody said, Chrissy Teigen, here's $6 million if you'll carry a clutch to the Grammys.
I mean, yeah, John Legend is, again, Versace kimono.
For clarification, John Legend is wearing black silk pants. And it's a Versace robe that is gold tipped.
I need you to say that again.
Along the edges.
But slower.
So, we watched Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
Well, how did
we
get to that?
I don't know.
Oh, John Lennon, John Legend.
Cookies.
Got it.
Right.
Yeah. I like to do that. You know, it's like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, but it's like, how did we get to the thing? We should probably make that a regular practice in our show because. Just to reflect on how quickly we could get into the weeds.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're recording this on a Saturday afternoon. You'll probably be hearing this on a Monday. But as of right now, in our present but your past, we recorded it also in our past.
It's
we
mind bend for you. I don't know. Wow.
We are omnipresent.
We're speaking to the future.
We're in our present talking about things in your past.
Baby.
But
yeah.
Speaking in the future tense.
I'm the protagonist.
Gross. I'm still really bothered that they didn't give him a name in that movie.
Anyway, this is not a tenant.
Yeah, so we watched the movie last night. I used the term watched fairly loosely because we talked a lot during it.
We've also seen it collectively.
Yeah, yeah.
6 million times.
Yes. Yeah. I'd say between the...
a round number.
The same number of times as Chrissy Teigen has dollars for her
coach. I would say... It would be a conservative assessment to say that we've collectively seen the movie less than 100 times.
Yeah.
That's been conservative. Specifically this one. Because the movie came out in 2001.
Yeah.
Did you guys see it in theaters when it came out?
No.
Yes.
I did not.
So Jordan did not. Will and I both did.
My first movie was Chamber of Secrets. I have a thing with watching... Because I think we talked about it on a previous episode. I have this thing of seeing like... It was just when I was a kid, because we didn't go to a lot of movies when I was a kid. If it was anything, it was just like whatever Pixar did.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't see like franchise things. So like the first Star Wars movie I ever saw was Attack of the Clones. And then the first Harry Potter movie I saw was Chamber of Secrets. I don't know what it was. It was just like I was a late follower, I suppose.
Yeah, you were just too cool.
No, it was. I guarantee fine. You, certainly wasn't
whatever,
that.
Whatever, man.
Certainly wasn't that. It probably had to do with the whole thing that, you know, there's magic and space wizards and, you know, you go to hell for that kind of thing.
It's true. It's true. Actually, hold on. I haven't told you guys this story, but last week, 2 weeks ago, I have one middle schooler in my youth group who is very into Harry Potter. Awesome. Like, very into Harry Potter.
Love that.
So he's listening.
Absolutely not. But one of my leaders is very not into Harry Potter for that exact reason of, like, there's magic, it's witchcraft, I just don't, like, and I respect that. That's fine if that's how you approach it. But
I don't. But
he and the sixth grader started going at it on a Wednesday night.
Oh, nice.
And the little sixth grader is like defending Harry Potter. He's fighting this battle, and it was something to behold.
Does that guy feel the same way about Lord of the Rings?
Absolutely not. Which we brought up. Yeah, I know. That's a whole other thing.
Well, there's so much Narnia, and we don't need to get into it. But like, if people just take the time to see, like, there's so much Christology and Trinitarian doctrine in Harry Potter. It's actually kind of insane.
Yeah.
So, true. not that it is a Christian fiction book by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
But there is so much stuff that you're like, oh, hey, that's a Jesus thing.
Yeah. A lot of it's not very subtle either.
No, not at all.
Particularly later.
She quotes scripture.
Yeah.
Several points, actually. Yeah. She may not know she was quoting scripture, but she was.
If she didn't know, as soon as she finds out, she'll say that's what she meant to do. we watched the movie last night. We took some time to, you know, we'd see things and we'd pause it. So we don't have like a set structure, kind of like when we were walking through the chapters. We do two chapters an episode, and then we'd kind of run through it, and one of these two gentlemen would do like a summary. We don't have a ton of that. Like, there's no reason for us to walk through the movie, like, as far as plot goes, because we just did that for 10 episodes with the book. And the plot's essentially the same. But there are some things that we notice. So the whole movie episode, because this is the first one we'll do, and we'll have seven more movie episodes we'll do, obviously. I guess the main structure we want to get is just talk about things that the movie changed or left out of the books that we liked, that we didn't like. I know we have a lot of opinions on, like, casting and how good or bad or just indifferent. We talked a lot about, like, 2001 CGI last night.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, which was funny.
I know why. It was because it was on the TV.
Well, it's just funny because I've never assessed the CGI in. Sure. Upon watching it, there's just something about putting the three of us in a room watching a thing, and it just, it just kind of flows from you.
It does.
So, yeah, we're just going to talk about the movie. Is there anything else we want to touch? Like, this is probably going to be a short episode.
Fingers crossed.
It'll probably still be like an hour and 36 minutes. But,
2 hours 30.
But yeah,
minutes.
We've already covered the plot points. We don't need to explain to you who Professor Quirrell is or anything like that. We're just going to talk about choices that the movie made that the book either didn't, or those kinds of things. Things we like, things we didn't, and that'll be the basic structure. So, why don't we just, like, unless you guys have anything else you want to say about, like, John Legend's Versace kimono, like, we can just take a break and then come back and do it.
No.
You open your mouth to say something, I want to know what it was.
I was just going to say, if John Legend, if you ever come across this podcast...
Sorry.
I would... Not sorry. And I would love a Versace...
Hold me! Have you heard what's his name?
John Legend.
Nope, Jamie Foxx. Have you heard Jamie Foxx's impersonation of John Legend?
No.
You don't like Jamie Foxx?
Hate Jamie Foxx.
Wow, all right.
Yikes.
Sorry, I have strong opinions about things.
Real quick, why? You just not think he's a good actor?
On and off the screen, I just don't like him very much. Who's in Django?
I haven't seen Django yet.
What?
Whoa. That is honestly so crazy to me.
That's very surprising.
At the time that it came out, I had only seen one Tarantino.
Which was?
And it was Kill Bill. It was the worst experience of my entire life.
Okay, so you need to watch... So my favorite movie of all time is Inglourious Basterds. It's my favorite movie of all time.
I'm sorry, what?
Inglourious? Huh?
Inglourious what?
Bastards.
Beep!
Oh, got it. I was like, where are we going with this? I was like, I know you heard me clearly, and I know you know the movie. But it's spelled differently, so it's fine.
Don't worry.
Yeah, no. That's my favorite movie of all time. You've seen that one. Have you seen that one?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know if, like, I didn't know if Kill Bill was still the only Tarantino you've seen.
I made, like, this I'm never doing Tarantino again decision after Kill Bill.
It's the way I felt about Kirk Cameron's first film.
Which one?
Titanic?
Kirk Cameron? That's James Cameron?
Kirk Cameron being left behind?
Kirk Cameron being, like, fireproof?
Okay.
Yeah, that's fair.
I really didn't mean to, like, go into his film.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be a joke that Christian movies are typically very bad.
Both of us forgot who Kirk Cameron was. So. Yeah. All right.
He was in... he starred in a...
Well, he wasn't Left Behind.
But what did he start... What was the sitcom he starred in?
Yeah. Growing Pains?
Growing Pains?
Is that what it was?
I have no idea.
Well, so his sister was in Full House.
Yeah.
Candace Cameron?
This is so not important at all.
All right, let's do the 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. We had Kirk Cameron going back to Quentin Tarantino. So anyway, you said you made a strong like no Tarantino thing.
Yeah, and then at a certain point,
Growing Pains.
Watched Inglourious Basterds anyway.
The dad from that movie, the show died like 2 years ago. By the way, Alan Thicke.
Alan Thicke.
No, that's a singer.
Robin Thicke.
Oh, his dad's right.
Alan Thicke.
I was like, what?
Yeah, the dad is Alan. I'm pretty sure his name is Alan Thicke.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I said. He died like 2 years ago. You know who else was in Growing Pains?
No.
As a young child, Matt Shackman, who's the director of WandaVision.
Do you remember when we were going to make this a short episode?
Yeah. Well, I'm saying this is probably the introduction is going to be the most lengthy and nonsensical portion. So what was the first Tarantino you saw then after you made that decision?
Inglourious.
Okay.
And I think it was because I like stumbled upon the clip of the opening sequence of that movie.
Oh, like when he's drinking the milk.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, and I was like, well, I have to see this now.
Because Christoph Waltz is
very good.
It's very good. Okay. Anyway, we're watching Django together.
Right now.
No, soon.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do a live, let's turn this into a live watch of Django. Evan, we'll let you leave. So as not to incriminate you. Okay.
I don't know what to say to that.
Anyway, we're going to take a brief break. We're going to take a brief break. We'll come back. We'll probably watch some basketball while we take a brief break. And then we're just going to walk through Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone film adaptation. BRB. And we're back. We've sufficiently spent that time talking about, Evan and I argued about soccer a little bit. So our teeth are on edge, separately.
We're not going to get into it?
No, there's no need.
He's thinking about it. So then we watched some basketball.
We did watch.
Now we're back.
We watched Will's alma mater is currently up by 10 to St. Bonaventure in the first round. So how do you feel about that?
I wish it were more.
Yeah.
But I always wish it were more.
So. Will's got this like place. Will's is like diversifying his fandom over the course of his life and I respect it cuz like you grew up an Arkansas fan.
Yeah.
Fan of the Razorbacks and he
they're doing very well.
Yeah, Will is firmly squarely on the Must Bus.
Yeah.
Which is what the fandom it's like how One Direction fans call themselves Directioners.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of Arkansas and their basketball program, the head coach is Eric Musselman.
Yeah.
So if you're a fan of Arkansas, you're on the Must Bus. But also, your alma mater is LSU.
Yeah.
So you cheer for LSU.
Yeah. And there's
so basically, just get as much education as you can across varying different.
Yeah.
SEC schools. Are you going to go to like get a doctorate at like
South Carolina's next? Yeah.
Gross.
Go Gamecocks.
It's not worth it.
Yeah.
Are you going to get a doctorate?
That's the question, isn't it?
Oh, is that a question that's going on?
Yeah, not actively, no.
Okay.
But, you know, it's back there.
I can't wait to see which SEC school you pick next.
It won't be.
Alabama.
It
won't
be.
He'll be one of the few who, you know, actually went to Alabama, root for Alabama.
See, I looked at Arkansas for my grad school, and...
So there you go. Well, you can't...
The only econ program they had was agricultural econ, which is...
Which makes sense, but you're not interested in that.
Right.
What if you did just turn tail and you're just like...
Yeah.
On a combine all day? You're just trying to learn about it?
Yeah.
Economics. Honestly, I
doctor,
see it.
Corn doctor.
Doctor corn doctor? Or just corn doctor?
No, doctor... Ellipses, corn doctor. Yeah, it's like Bond. So we just want to talk about the movie. So we want to throw stuff to the wall, see what sticks, or do you want to? Let's talk about.
Would you like? You want to start with that? You were going to say something.
Let's talk about casting, because I think that's something we all love about how well they nailed. Because the thing is it's good, like, that they use all British actors. And I think, too, when the movie came out, we were all either, the three of us, the three of us were either 8 or 9 in 2001, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we don't necessarily have the... now we can sit here and say, like, oh, well, the people that they have in the films are, like, British legends.
Right.
And a good portion of them are British legends.
But this was our first introduction.
Yeah, but when we're 8... Yeah, when we're 8, 9, it's our first introduction to British cinema, for the most part, at least knowingly. And, of course, we weren't sitting there... Yeah. We weren't sitting there being like, oh, my God, it's Sir Robbie Coltrane, when we were 9. We weren't doing that.
I was sitting there going, what did he say?
Yeah, it's like, what did he say? What was that? You killed my cat.
Happy Christmas. Who says that?
I do love that. But, you know, in hindsight, sitting here now, it's like, it actually is kind of amazing that they got, and at this point, there was only a couple books, maybe 3 at the very most, when the movie came out.
I think 2.
No, it was at least 3.
I think it was 3.
Yeah.
Because I think the success of Prisoner of Azkaban probably catapulted the ability for them to film the franchise. So at this point, you know, it's not like it's this long-standing thing, like, where people have been begging for a franchise for decades, right? It's like, the fact that they were able, basically off the success of 2, maybe 3 books at the most, were able to coerce all of these British legends to star in this thing that is a little off the wall. I mean, of course, you have things like Star Wars and Lord of the Rings, and so there's franchises that exist that are obviously very good and respected, but it is like a very fantastical thing. So the idea that you can get like renowned stage actors like Sir Richard Harris and Maggie Smith, people who spent their lives acting on stage and things like King Lear and all these other things, to come put a big pointy hat on and play a wizard for 8 movies is a bit of a coup. So like, casting choices that just work. Let's go. Rattle them off.
So Alan Rickman,
all of them. I mean,
Alan Rickman is great, Snape, and I think Maggie Smith is a fabulous McGonagall. What I think I was most impressed with on this particular watch was the child actors were, I mean. Not like...
Certainly not Susan Bones, because she's useless. I can't tell you how many times Will last night was just like, look how dumb Susan Bones is.
Had it out for Susan Bones last night for some reason.
I just noticed when they were walking into the hall, she was like... The look on her face when she was looking up at the ceiling was very distracting to me for some reason. I don't know what it was.
Well, so it's that thing... You're talking about child actors. It's that thing where... Because Evan made the point... There's like a behind-the-scenes featurette that talks about the fact that the floating candles were there, like... in real time, suspended with fishing wire.
And that was the first time any of them had seen
the Great Hall.
So their reactions are legit.
Ostensibly, above the floating candles is just green screen.
Yeah.
So they had to tell the child actors, like, feign awe.
Right?
And so, like, Daniel Radcliffe was good at that, like, figured that out. Emma Watson figured that out. Rupert Grint somehow in between... chicken legs figured that out.
Yeah.
But like,
he was going in.
Whoever played Susan Bones, you know, God bless her.
She was unimpressed by what was happening.
She just looked gassy.
Candles again. Oh my gosh.
But what I was super impressed by was like their ability to either identify or develop talent in child actors.
Yeah.
Because some of the, like, lesser characters change actors later in the movies, but all of the main ones are the same the whole time, which means, like, all of the Weasley kids are the same.
Yeah, like, Oliver and James Phelps, who played the twins, Rupert, obviously. I mean, if you're going to pick Ron, like, you kind of have to stick with the main triad, right?
Right.
But, like, some of these tertiary characters you can change out, but, like...
Jenny, even.
The fact that they were able... Yeah, the fact that they were able to identify Bonnie Wright and... Oliver and James Phelps to be the twins, who, like, they're making these choices and going out on a limb, but, like, literally now, 20 years removed, we couldn't see any other children playing.
Right.
No.
It just wouldn't make sense. And even, like, if they were to do a reboot in the future, which I pray to God they don't.
They will.
But they will. Because, you know why? Money.
Because we
and I'll watch it. Yeah, I'll go watch it. But it's that thing. It's like, I can't see X as this character anymore. It's like, you know, you can't imagine seeing somebody else in those shoes. And the fact that they were able to do that with like 10-year-old kids is pretty nuts.
Yeah.
Because child actors are so dangerous.
Because they're good as kids.
Right.
And then they're not as adults.
Because like I played soccer a couple years as a kid.
I did not know where that sentence was going.
I didn't either.
I played soccer a couple years as a kid, right? But like, so when I was like 9 and 10, and I played goalie, and I was okay because I played baseball and had good hands. But like, if I would have had to stick with soccer from the age of 9 to 18, like, there's a chance that I would either become disinterested or like I just didn't have it, right?
Yeah.
Whatever it is. And so you're taking a risk with casting a 10-year-old Daniel Radcliffe, who's the
also putting fame on those kids.
And putting fame on those kids to the point that they could just go full Macaulay Culkin, or they could, you know, or they could just like not have it. And they were good at being a 10-year-old,
yeah,
but not great at being a tumultuous 17-year-old.
Right.
And that's the story that you need to tell.
And to your point, Will, like, I mean, all those actors, outside of Emma Watson, like, Emma Watson has been very popular in the States. The others less so in the States. But in England, all of them have had phenomenal careers. I mean, Tom Felton, Rupert Grant, Daniel Radcliffe, they have all gone on and done a lot of stuff since then.
Right.
So to be able to pick out an 11-year-old, probably younger when they casted him, and then just be like, that one is going to go places. And then to do that with 4, 5, 6 people, that is great.
Yeah.
And they had to make tough choices too, because like Matthew Lewis, who played Neville Longbottom, talked about the fact that he thought he was going to be Harry Potter. Like, he's talked about the fact that he went out for Harry Potter, thought he had a really good shot, and they called him and were like, hey, you got the part, but it's not Harry, it's Neville. And so the fact that they were able to identify Matthew Lewis as a good child actor, but not for Harry, but he would be a perfect Neville Longbottom, and now we can't see anybody else as Neville Longbottom but Matthew Lewis.
Yeah.
It's just a testament to how thorough they were.
Yeah, so, 11-year-old Jordan did great as Neville Longbottom.
Dude, that's we'll talk about that, yeah. So I realized, I guess, in this watch, and again, we watched it, again, using that term watched very loosely. We were present as the movie was playing. I noticed for the first time in the multiplicity of times I've watched that film that I, as an 11-year-old, looked exactly like Neville Longbottom. Like, exactly. And Evan even went through the trouble of finding a picture of me when I was, I think I would have been about 9.
He was shockingly ready for this.
I was like, yeah. I think,
I've been waiting.
I think I was 7. For so long. I think I was like 7 or 8 in the photo that he pulled up. And I was like, yep, that's right. That's the one. But so casting choices are great. Like, Alan Rickman as Snape is just like, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Nobody else could have played him.
Nobody else could play him.
And he doesn't look exactly like what he's described in the books. But he's one of those where it's like, it doesn't matter. That is Snape.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah.
And, you know, Maggie Smith as McGonagall is perfect.
Oh, from her first line.
Yeah.
All the way through.
I love how much rapport she, like, has with the kids. You know, when they are late to Transfiguration and Harry says, sorry, Professor, we got lost. And she says, you know, I'm not going to do the accent, but she's like, you know, perhaps one of you can transfigure the other into a stopwatch and maybe one of you will be on time. I just like the rapport that she has with kids. And it makes things like that, the moments that she has like that, that her favorite line of mine comes in the very last movie where Harry shows up and she just says, Potter, it's good to see you. And it's just like, you have to see all of that come in all of these movies, and she's put in the time of building that rapport.
Yeah.
And she is hard-nosed. Like, McGonagall is supposed to be hard-nosed and a very difficult professor. I imagine her course is very difficult to pass.
Yeah.
But you know that she genuinely likes, she genuinely cares. And Maggie Smith is just perfect at that. Also, that was 2001. Maggie Smith looks exactly the same in 2021 as she did in 2001. Granted, she looked like an elderly woman in 2001. But she's gotten, obviously, 20 years the elder. But she looks almost exactly the same.
Yeah.
She was also in the old Clash of the Titans movie, and she did not look that different.
No.
In the 1981 Clash of the Titans.
No.
So she just always looked like an old lady.
I was on TikTok. I was on TikTok the other day.
That was her in Clash of the Titans.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I was on TikTok the other day and came across there was like an Oscars, and like during a commercial break as a joke, they like put a kiss cam around the room, and we're like having different actors like put up on the kiss cam that were not together, and they put Dame Maggie Smith on a kiss cam with Leonardo DiCaprio. And he kissed her right on the lips.
Yes.
It was awesome. Did. It was so great.
Yes, he did.
And I was like, oh, I love those two humans so much. but I guess, so we talked about it briefly last night, talking about casting, like, so we have a Dumbledore in this movie that's only in this one and the next one. Mm-hmm. And the question is always posed, I think, a lot of times, it's like, which Dumbledore do you prefer? Will said, I think the exact phrasing was, I don't really much care, is what you said.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're very different. But they're both, like, Dumbledore in different ways, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think Richard Harris, who's the actor that plays him in the first two films, is what I pictured Dumbledore to be. But I think I made the point last night, like, if he would have lived past Chamber of Secrets, like, I can't see him battling Voldemort in the Ministry of Magic.
Like that actor.
Yeah, I can't see Sir Richard Harris, like, battling, you know, Ralph Fiennes, who's probably like 40 years his younger at the time.
Yeah.
So Michael Gambon's probably a better Dumbledore for that, but it almost works out that they had two, because it's I don't get distracted by the fact that they changed the second biggest character in the films, question mark?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not distracted by that, because it's like, oh, this is more believable. I like that Richard Harris was older and cuter, but this also works.
Yeah.
Whereas Ethel, probably on the other end of the spectrum of, I mean, I know that Sir Richard Harris is probably closer to what the books had in mind and definitely fits the description better. I like Michael Gambon.
Oh, I love Michael Gambon as well. I prefer Michael Gambon.
I think his Dumbledore, Snape and Dumbledore are probably two of the points of the movies that were slightly different than the books that I think work better than the books even did. Like, their versions of Snape and Dumbledore, I think retroactively, I like them better, I fit them into the story.
I think the character of Dumbledore through the books sort of changes
Agreed.
A little bit. And
well, because you just see more of him, so
you see more of him. In the first couple books, he's sort of this, like, he's this more, like quirky, like, a little bit of a mentor, but mostly just kind of this silly old man who you know is, like,
Secretly brilliant.
And, like, has this sort of goofy relationship with Harry in ways.
Yeah.
And I think Richard Harris was probably better for that Dumbledore.
Agreed.
And then in the later ones, when it's like, you know, he's on a mission all the time.
It's almost like they planned it out.
Yeah. They killed Richard Harris. That's what I'm saying.
Bush did 9/11.
You heard it last year.
Yeah, it's a conspiracy. So, yeah, casting choices are great. We'll talk about cast. So, like, I don't know if you guys have been keeping up with it. Evan, you don't have TikTok, Will, but your wife does, correct?
Yeah.
So, Evan and I have TikTok. We send TikToks to each other recently. So, you might not be aware of this, Will, but Evan, you've probably picked up on it. There's, like, a resurgence of people loving, specifically, like, Generation Z girls loving Draco Malfoy. Just as, like, a...
Okay.
It's just, like, been this thing.
It was just emo kids when we were growing up.
Yeah.
But now it's just normal Gen Z girls.
And so they love Draco Malfoy. And so there's been this, like, resurgence of love for Draco Malfoy for whatever reason. And so
including Tom Felton. Character.
Yeah, they like Tom Felton. Because Tom Felton's a fun guy. Like, if you watch a lot of his interviews, like, and then he did a competition on TikTok. It was, we may have mentioned it on the podcast.
Yeah.
Where it's like, if you post a video of yourself saying Potter, like he always did, Potter, you could win. Like, it was something. Like, it was like a meet and greet or something like that. So he has a presence, but he has a presence on TikTok, but you know what Tom Felton does not have a presence in? The Harry Potter films. Because I sent this fact to them the other day. Did you know, listeners, that Tom Felton as Draco Malfoy, so when I say Tom Felton, I also obviously mean Draco Malfoy. Draco Malfoy, over the course of the 8 Harry Potter films, only has 31 minutes of screen time. Which seems so wild.
Crazy.
So that's that's around 2% of the entire films.
Yep.
He's on the screen.
I'm not, like, I would need to see that compared to some other people to know, like, how surprising that is. Because in the books,
Who do you want to compare him to?
I would compare him to, like,
let's
compare him to, like, Hagrid.
Okay.
Or, like, Fred Weasley.
No way. Okay, this is shocking. Okay, so Hagrid, Robbie Coltrane, is featured in 45 minutes and 45 seconds.
Okay.
So he has a quarter of an hour more.
Yeah.
On screen.
And that's not surprising because in the first movie, it's just Harry and Hagrid for 10, 15 minutes.
Here's some surprising ones for you. Sirius Black, 20 minutes, 45 seconds. George. Whoa. George Weasley, 20 minutes. Fred Weasley, 19 minutes and 30 seconds.
Why is Sirius on so much?
So much?
Yeah.
Wait, that's so little.
We may have talked about this too.
In the books, there are a lot of these characters that in the books occupy more space in Harry's imagination.
Yes.
Than you could put on screen.
Yeah.
Right? In the first book, Harry is obsessed with Snape and Malfoy as, like, they're somehow behind the weather when it's raining. Like, they're...
Yeah.
And in the film, Snape teaches a class.
Yeah.
He's at the headmaster's table.
Right.
And then he
threatens Quirrell for, like...
He threatens Quirrell, and then he's at the Quidditch match.
Yeah.
And that's, like, it. It's, like, four scenes.
Right. But in the books, Harry is like, Snape. It's all Snape. So, like, it's not that surprising to me that screen time doesn't necessarily match up with how significant the characters are.
Well, just like, it's surprising, too, that, like, so Draco Malfoy and subsequently Tom Felton's portrayal of him is part of our childhood.
Right.
And it's crazy to think that that portrayal only consisted of half an hour.
Yeah.
Across 15 years of film.
Yeah.
Like, here's some stats for you. In the second movie, Dobby has more screen time than Draco Malfoy. In the third movie, Buckbeak has more screen time than Draco Malfoy. He's not even listed in the top 10 on Goblet of Fire or on Order of the Phoenix. Even in Half-Blood Prince.
Those make sense, though.
But even Half-Blood Prince, which is ostensibly a Draco Malfoy story in a lot of ways... Draco has less screen time than Harry, Dumbledore, Ron, Hermione, Professor Slughorn, Professor Snape, Ginny.
Yeah.
Ginny? No way.
Ginny has 30 seconds more screen time than Draco Malfoy.
She was dating Harry, though.
That's true. They got the kissy-kissy scene.
Which isn't even in the book in that way.
So that's just, that's crazy to think about, like, the people who are so big in our minds and synonymous with the franchise, like... I would put Draco next to Harry, Ron, Hermione in my mind.
Well, yeah, when you think of Harry, you think of his foil is Voldemort, and then a very close second is Draco Malfoy.
Right.
Like, and that's just what you think. And then, but it was just surprising to me that he has so little screen time. But obviously, cast very well. He did what he needed to do with his 31 minutes of fame.
The Dursleys, I feel like, might be the best, like, low-key the best casting.
What's funny is we watched the movie and I was laying in bed feeding my son his bottle before bed last night, and we were sitting there, I was scrolling through Twitter, and just unrelated, like, I looked and it was like the best, and somebody had tweeted the best casting in Harry Potter was by far whoever played Vernon Dursley.
Honestly.
It's just like, he was perfect.
Honestly,
so we talked about casting. What other things do we like that stick out?
I mean, the score was...
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. We got into a Phil Collins Tarzan discussion simply by proxy of talking about how great John
Phil
Williams
Phil Collins did not do this soundtrack, but imagine
Can
if he did.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, John Williams was so good for the soundtrack that it led us to talk about how good other soundtracks were.
Yeah.
By comparison. John Williams is unbelievable. You can't think of Harry Potter without thinking of Evan. Would you?
No. That's not the end of the podcast.
There's just so many things. Yeah. And then we're sitting there watching it. So, like, when we enter the Great Hall, Evan, can you do that then? That song that plays. We were just like doing.
Yeah.
We were doing that throughout the whole movie. And there are just so many memorable songs. It was funny. On my. I went through a phase of listening to or reading the books again a couple years ago, and then I had my Spotify rewind, like, at the end of the year. The number one song I had listened to was Lily's theme from part one of Deathly Hallows, I believe.
So it wasn't John Williams at that point.
No, that was who was that? I wanted to say it was Michael Giacchino, but it wasn't. Alexandre Desplat.
Okay.
It was French. It wasn't John Williams at that time, no. But it was my number one played song of the year because I got into this thing. It's like, well, I'm reading Harry Potter. I want to listen to Harry Potter things.
Yeah.
And I just love Lily's theme. But John Williams was amazing. What else do we like? And then we can probably take a break and then come back and talk about things we dislike or things that were omitted.
I mean, these were things that we appreciated being this way in 2001. I think it probably looks a little hokey now, but they didn't opt for a ton of CGI. I know we talked about the weird 2001 CGI in some scenes, but for the most part, they built the sets. They were on location. Yeah, it was prosthetics on people, and it looks so good.
Yeah, even at one point, Evan goes, "Hey, Kansas won." Just like we said they would.
That's not what
that's not what Evan said. Evan said at one point when we were when Petunia comes to get Harry out of the cupboard, like right after the scene where he's dropped off at the beginning, it's like the second scene of the movie. Evan goes, "God, I forgot how annoying their house is."
Yeah, I hate their house.
Just the way it looks. It looks it is such so visually assaulting.
Yeah.
But
like they designed that.
Yeah, they designed that. That whole I was like and then I told Evan, I was like, I think their whole house is like on exhibit. Yeah. At the Warner Brothers studio in London. But they did, they went for a lot of practical effects, but there were just some CGI moments that, like the CGI snake at the beginning when they're at the reptile house, like looks, it didn't look bad actually. That's
for 2001.
For 2001, it doesn't look bad. But then, like, there's the scene where they're taking flying lessons, and Neville looks like, so like Neville's on the ground, it's Matthew Lewis, and then as soon as he takes off, he looks like he was an extra in Polar Express. Like, that's what he looks like. He looks like he was a kid on Polar Express.
What's it? The Uncanny Valley.
Uncanny Valley, yes. Yeah, it's just right enough for me to say, okay, that's a human being, and that's Neville Longbottom. But it's just wrong enough to where I'm like, okay, I feel a little weird. But honestly, not bad. And I think I made the point, like, Fluffy the three-headed dog looked pretty good.
Yeah,
for 2001.
Well, great.
But I think it's like it is one of those things where like 2001, it's easier to do the big stuff because you don't have to be so particular with like the minutiae.
Yeah.
And you can kind of smooth
particularly with Fluffy because it's a dark room.
Yeah.
Dog.
Easier to do.
You don't have to fill in so many details because it's just like it's dark in here basically. Yeah. You need some drool, and you need some teeth.
What do you think that drool was when he drools on Ron? I thought about that last night. I was like, what do you think is the mixture that made it look like that?
Clear slime or something.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. They went to Nickelodeon and got the slime and said, can we get it before you put the food coloring in it?
Yeah.
They're both at Universal Studios, so that makes sense.
Probably. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that was great. The little dragon, Norbert, looks good in that movie.
I forget that they mixed up, but purposely changed why they all got detention together, and it wasn't because they were... got caught in the book it's they got caught taking the dragon to the tallest tower, but in the book it was Draco Malfoy just snuck down to Hagrid's hut.
Snooper's gonna snoop
and went to tattle
something. Yeah. Something that I thought was funny was they made the decision there are too many anonymous Gryffindor number four people, just like there's some Gryffindors here. So they made Seamus the one who blows stuff up. And I never, like, realized that was happening because it was just, like, comic relief. But it's like, this wasn't in the book. He wasn't, like, accidentally blowing up things all the time.
If anything, he just had a fiery attitude. Just saying. Later they argue about their mothers. Well, I mean, that's part of it.
Whatever, Jordan.
I'm also Irish.
Yeah.
They had to give him a thing.
They
blows stuff up. Dean Thomas is black.
Right.
I mean, that's not me trying to be funny. That's just is what it is.
That's how you tell the Gryffindors apart. Like,
yeah, Dean Neville, doesn't have a line.
He has
Neville
one.
Is,
Neville got a remember all.
Oh, yeah.
He has that one line.
Neville is forgetful and goofy. Dean is black. Seamus blows stuff up.
Dean is black and muggle-born.
Real lack of girls doing anything in this movie.
That's Susan Bones, though, right, Will?
She's a Hufflepuff.
Yeah.
But no lines.
There's also, we noticed there were a lot of kids and professors that were in this movie in like the background that you never see again.
Like at the head table.
Yeah.
There's so many, you're like, you never see them again.
Right.
Which goes further to point out to you that, like, we talked about this with the book in particular, that we are seeing this through Harry's eyes. So as the book changes, as characters change, some of it we can assume is the fact that we're seeing Harry grow up and see things differently. But like the Great Table, like, of course there's more teachers at the table than we hear about in the book. That makes sense.
Right.
But in the book, you know the teachers that matter to Harry. That's it.
Yeah.
So it is kind of cool to see
the choices maybe Hogwarts they made is bigger. To fill it out.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Because otherwise there'd be like 14 people in this room.
Right.
If it was who Harry cared about. Which is kind of cool.
I do want to know which of the professors was like, so she was a black lady, but she had like some gold. Her gown was, her robes were like kind of what John Legend was wearing.
Versace kimono.
It was a Versace. She was wearing a Versace kimono. But also, I think they just gave her kind of like this golden hue. Like maybe she had some golden like blush on or something like that.
Like gold flex or something like that.
Never see her again.
No. Never hear about her.
No.
I have no clue who she is.
No. And that's the thing too, in the books, like Wilhelmina Grubbly Plank has a few scenes. But I don't think we ever see Grubbly Plank in the films.
No.
So, or and she fixes Hedwig. She teaches for almost the entire fifth year. Yes, yes, because Hagrid gets Umbridge. Yeah,
yeah.
And we never see her. So there are so many professors that are left out. But like to Evan's point, we just need to see the people that Harry's paying attention to.
Yeah.
Okay. Things we liked. That's good. Trying to think if there's anything else that we talked about last night that we haven't mentioned in like the like category. I don't think there is.
Just in the overall, I think the most impressive thing is like it feels as immersive as it should.
Yeah.
Like you, particularly in theaters, but like even not like from the like aesthetic and the music and the costuming and all of it, it's like this feels real in a way, and it has the same feel of the books as like we're gonna go we're here in our normal world and we're gonna go off into this magical world on the train or through the wall at Diagon Alley or wherever.
Is fantastic in the sense that, I mean, it is fantasy, but they do it so well that it feels believable in a fantastic way.
All right. So we like it.
Take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about, do you want to talk about like things that just didn't work or like omissions?
Yeah.
For the books? Yeah, we'll do that. All right. We'll be right back. All right. We're back to wrap up our movie discussion. Are there things that like you think like has not aged well, or things that like you just disliked about it? I mean, there's not things I can think of that I'm just like, yeah, I don't like this. It doesn't work for me. I mean, there's things that are omissions that I would like, wish would have been there.
Yeah. So, go into that. What are you?
So like a lot of the stuff underneath the school where they're going through the obstacle course, like they leave out the whole potions thing.
Yeah.
And I think, so like, I think they omitted a couple things. The devil snare thing, Hermione uses sunlight, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that, not that much, but, they kind of each had a stage for like one of the three to kind of show off. So the devil snare thing was Hermione.
Yeah.
The wizard's chest was Ron. And then the keys, I guess, is Harry's.
Right.
But like it just, if to me, like leaving out the potions thing kind of just makes Hermione's thing like, it's like, oh, Hermione remembered a riddle.
Yeah.
Or you know, spell. Yeah. Whereas Ron played, you know, ostensibly like a 45-minute game of high stakes chess.
Yeah.
And Harry had to, and also, I can't remember in the movie, do they have Ron and Hermione on brooms as well? Because in the books they are.
No.
Right. I would have loved to see Hermione on a broom. I would have loved to see that. I think that would have been really funny. Because she couldn't get it figured out in
class.
In Mrs. Hooch's class.
Yeah, she never really does.
No.
Yeah.
She, the only time we see her fly is when she has to, like, get on a Thestral, I think, in 5
mm-hmm.
with Luna Lovegood.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would have loved to see Hermione on a broom, but also, like, I think the omission of the potions thing, because to me, almost the whole potions riddle was almost more dangerous than the wizard's chest.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
By far. And yeah. So, the omission of that, it kind of, like, I don't know, it's just, like, they got through a plant. They got a key in a enclosed. It's not like the key can go anywhere. As long as you can see it and keep your eyes on it, and they have Harry, who's the greatest, the youngest seeker in about 100 years, yeah. And it's in an enclosed space. As long as Harry can just find it, he's fine. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the threat there is you'll get sliced up by the other keys to the point where you can't.
Yeah, but they don't really even, like I'm saying in the movie, it's not really a threat because they don't make them like assaulting until
he grabs it.
He grabs it and he's like. Because in the book, it's like they chase him around quite a lot, yeah. And they cut him up. But, like, they just kind of, like...
Yeah.
And, again, it could be just, like, limitations of 2001 CGI or story choices or whatever.
Yeah.
But, like, I feel like the whole potion thing was... And especially in the book, like, the potion thing was very much like a... This is actually a life or death issue.
Yeah.
And also, it gives Hermione the chance... Because in the book, like, when Hermione figures it out... It's, like, immensely impressive.
Yeah.
But, like, in the movie, it's just like, oh, Hermione remembered a riddle about Devil's Stare not liking sunlight, and then it's over.
Yeah.
So I feel like Hermione maybe didn't get as much of a chance to shine as she did in the books.
In the books, the Norbert situation was pretty prolonged.
Yes.
And yeah. they had to take it up to the tower for Charlie's people and blah, blah, blah. In the movie, we just watched it yesterday. I don't remember what happens to Norbert.
Nothing.
He's just there? He just lives there?
You never hear about him.
You never hear about him again because Draco sees Draco looks in the hut window.
Right, right, yeah.
And then that's when they throw the cloak back on him and they run up to the school, but they get...
And then Norbert's just gone?
Yeah, Norbert's not mentioned the rest of the movie. I think Hagrid...
Hagrid says something about, like, how to get rid of
him. Yeah.
Or what,
yeah.
Whatever. Yeah.
Also, Evan and I noticed, I think you were in the restroom or you were fixing yourself another glass of water or something. But for what, and this is like a minor thing, but Hagrid says that he won Fluffy off an Irish chappie instead of a Greek chappie.
Hmm.
I don't know if that's just like they didn't think audiences know what Greece is, or maybe it's just more, maybe it's like, maybe they just like, oh yeah, well, Irish people are obviously going to be drinking in pubs and gambling.
Yeah, I don't know.
But. Or maybe they just didn't think that people could make the connection between him winning a Cerberus off of a Greek person. Like,
yeah.
That wouldn't make sense. People wouldn't get it. Like, why does it have to be a Greek? But in the movie, Hagrid says, I won him off an Irish chap I met at the pub.
Which just means that Quirrell at some point was sitting in a pub and just being like...
Throwing an Irish accent.
Would you like a big dog,
yeah,
eh?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So, somewhere in actual Harry Potter canon... Professor Quirrell has thrown on a stutter and an Irish accent.
Best actor in Harry Potter.
Yeah. So, yeah, we noticed that last night, and I was like, I looked at Evan, I was like, did he say Irish? Like, yeah, no, it's not Greek.
Most of the stuff that's left out isn't, like, substantial. It's not a big deal, but it is just all, like, do what?
Peeves.
It's not movies at all.
You know, it's condensing for the sake of time. It is a 2-hour and 35-minute movie.
Yeah, I think some of that was like ads and then the credits. So it's runtime's probably around like 2:20 or something like that. But
still, that's a long movie.
That's a long movie.
For a kid movie.
Yeah.
So I mean, they had to condense down a whole bunch of stuff, which kind of stinks. But you know, you get the bare bones. Peeves being not there. Let's be real. Probably 2001 CGI is the reason for that. The ghosts were about as good as they could do.
Yeah.
I love the Fat Friar. He comes in holding a cup, and he's like halfway on the floor. He's going ooh. Also, I didn't picture the Bloody Baron like being
like a musketeer.
Yeah, French musketeer.
Well, and, like laughing as he comes through. He's like, "Ha ha!" Ah,
yeah. You know? I picture Bloody Baron is like
he's covered in blood.
He's like yeah, and didn't he have chains on him?
Yeah, I think
he's like
so.
Jacob Marley from Christmas Carol.
Specifically Muppet Christmas Carol.
Yes.
Less scary that way.
Well, have you seen the Jim Carrey Christmas Carol where he plays everybody?
It's terrifying.
Once, maybe.
Okay, it's very good, but like, and it's very true to the, like the original Charles Dickens.
All I remember like, about it is like the sizes get weird at some point, but like
they shrink,
people shrink, or grow or something.
Well, like the ghost of Christmas present is like Santa Claus and he's huge. But the Jacob Marley CGI in that is like terrifying. And for whatever reason, I just saw like in my mind's eye Bloody Baron being like a version of that Jacob Marley. And he wasn't. He was just like a caricatured Three Musketeer, like, you know, and he just kind of swung his fencing sword as he flew down the tables and maybe upset some dinner rolls, I suppose. But
if somebody hadn't said, "Look, it's the Bloody Baron," there's no way I would
know.
Yeah.
And also, the first ghost to fly in was a indiscriminate lady, which I assume would be the Gray Lady.
Yeah.
Of course, completely different actor.
Yeah.
That's like the only time we see the Fat Friar. But then we had a moment of realization last night that Nearly Headless Nick is John Cleese. I just forgot, I guess. Yeah. But like John Cleese, who is obviously like a Monty Python legend, and they just like John Cleese had enough time to be in the movie.
Is he?
He's not in the movies ever again, I don't think. Oh, he's in Chamber.
Chamber. He has to be in Chamber, but
we don't get his death day party, which is still a show. Oh. I'll be talking about that this time next movie.
Yeah.
Next book. But they got the whole like didn't make it into the Headless Hunt again, which is like front Chamber of Secrets because that's what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there you go. Peeves being left out is probably CGI limitations. Also, it is kind of just like goofy.
Yeah,
but like,
not really, he's not that important.
Yeah. I mean, Peeves does something like Peeves.
He gets him into trouble.
Peeves causes a lot of trouble for like Dolores Umbridge because like Peeves, for whatever reason, like obeys Fred and George.
Yeah,
because they're a harbinger of chaos, just like him.
And then like
he loves it.
Like the reason, like he's kind of the reason they find out Filch is a squib. Mm-hmm. To some degree.
Yeah.
Like, he has that moment in Filch's office and chamber, like, where Harry tells him to go smash some things.
Is the concept of squibs in the movies at all?
No.
I don't think so.
I mean, Filch clearly is, if you know what a squib is, but I don't think it's articulated at all in the movies.
No. No. Yeah, the other thing, and this is, you know, just 2001, but Will and I in particular were noticing that, like, when the ghost came in, it was definitely somebody in a microphone just going,
yeah.
Or like they did.
What are the what's the job that job sounds? Called? It's called a foley artist.
Yeah.
And in this movie, I don't think they really did it. They did it in the second one because of the Wizarding duel, for sure it happens. But they don't do like the wand wishing sound.
They do for Hermione specifically. Whenever Hermione has a wand in her hand,
okay,
they give her like a. Because like the Alohomora thing, it was like.
Well, that's what I mean. In the first two, they definitely do it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think they drop it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't remember it in the later ones.
Starting in movie 3, everything gets significantly less cheesy than it was in the first two.
Yeah. But again, it's just somebody going...
No, for sure. Yeah.
Like you would if you were playing Harry Potter at home right now.
Yeah, it's like when I shoot Star Wars lasers, the noise I make is...
Pew, pew.
Yeah. Also, it should...
What's this camera angle?
It bears saying that this movie was directed... So... Evan and I, this is probably should have been something we mentioned in Things We Like. Evan made the mention that it just feels very warm, which is why I always say that Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone is just a Christmas movie to me.
Yeah.
It's just the way it feels.
Yeah.
It bears saying that the movie was directed by Christopher Columbus, who also directed Home Alone.
Yeah.
So, Christopher Columbus, great. If you want to call Harry Potter a Christmas movie, he just knows. He knows how to get Christmas.
And it's specifically
and child actors.
Specifically this one, right? Like, the other Harry Potter movies don't have quite that same, like,
no. Warm-home. I mean, the content gets darker, so it's kind of a natural thing, but, like, he was a good director to pick. Of course, you could have picked a better director or whatever. I mean, Christopher Columbus isn't, like, top echelon. I mean, he's doing better than I am at movies. But,
arguable.
He did great as director. I think he did the second one as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then it moved to, like, David Yates and some other folks.
Yeah.
There was also like I can't remember.
Alfonso Cuarón.
Yes. Which is why it's so good.
Yeah, it's arguably.
I think it was David
favorite.
Yates after
that. Like, what else did I'm trying to think?
Someone else did the fourth one. I feel like David Yates picked it up on 5.
I think it was David Yates and then somebody else and then back.
Alfonso Cuarón did Gravity, which is and he did Prisoner of Azkaban. Who did Goblet?
Is that David Yates?
I'm just looking. Mike Newell.
Oh. All right. Well, this is great radio.
Yeah, we should have done our homework beforehand. Sorry, guys.
Let's see. Thing I wanted to say last night.
Oh, yes.
Oh, Will right.
left us on a cliffhanger for the last, like, 18 hours.
David Yates started in Order of the Phoenix. Gotcha. That's what I was looking at. And he did Fantastic Beasts, question mark? He did those. I don't care about he did those as well. So. Well, I'm just, I don't either, but I'm just saying, I think he did those. I care now that they have Mads Mikkelsen. Anyway, what you were going to say last night that you made us wait until this moment to find out is.
So, Madam Hooch.
Mrs. Hooch, girls volleyball coach.
Yes, the girls volleyball coach.
Old Hawkeye.
It's possible I'm wrong about this, but I'm almost certain. She at the end of the Quidditch match, she blows her whistle.
Gryffindor wins.
Aha! No. She says Gryffindor win. In British fashion, a group of people is a plural noun. So Gryffindor win. In the same way that Liverpool win, right? Any Coldplay are a band, right?
Titans win. Right. Liverpool win.
Right. Sure. Any group of people is plural. Whereas in American English, if the noun sounds singular, we treat it as singular. So, at the end of the Quidditch match, Madam Hooch says Gryffindor win, but at the end of the movie, Dumbledore says
Gryffindor wins the House Cup.
The House Cup. So they have split the baby on is Gryffindor a singular or plural noun?
I mean, the answer to that is really just like, aren't we all Gryffindor? At all times.
Will, you made me wait 18 hours.
For simple grammatical choices.
For that.
You don't think it's interesting that the British English is different on singular versus plural noun?
Bro, they say so many things different than me. Biscuits or cookies.
I just think it's really interesting that either the actors made those separate decisions,
yeah,
or whoever wrote the script was like, let's throw this one in for the Americans. They understand.
I bet they said it and nobody even noticed until this exact moment. You were the first person to ever notice this.
Richard Harris, if you're listening.
Did you do it on purpose? And why?
He's not.
What was the conspiracy?
He's dead. God rest his soul.
Golly, don't bring it up.
Yeah, I'm mad at. That is interesting. I'm mad at you, Will.
That is something.
Somebody in our audience loved that. Yeah. I don't know who it was. Somebody.
Your mother. Your mother. Walker. Yeah, your mother.
Yes. I do love that about the movies in particular. The books, of course, were written by a British person, and it retains much of the British lingo. And like,
I don't know if it suits her to be American in 5 years, she will retroactively make herself American.
Well, that sounds inaccurate. But I do love that in the movies. To your point earlier, Jordan, that was most of our introductions probably to a full British movie for sure ever. And then a lot of the stuff in it, like Harry Potter was my world into anything British for a very long time.
Yeah, yeah.
So I love that they kept stuff like Happy Christmas or Gryffindor Win.
Yeah.
Or whatever, you know, have you. I love that about it. It was great.
Yeah, because if they all just had like Cockney accents, I would have been really unapproachable. You know what I mean? Like, which one of them talks like My Fair Lady? If you think Susan Bones. Because Susan Bones is it Susan Bones' mom that's like comes up later in the books?
Yeah. She's like some sort of magistrate.
Amelia Bones?
Yeah.
Yes.
She's on the Wizengamot.
Yes. Ooh, that's a good question.
Is it?
Pronounce that again. I don't think you're wrong.
Why is it always me, man?
No, I'm curious.
It's always me. The Wizengamot.
So I always say Wizengamot.
I do too.
I don't think there's a right or wrong way because I think it's like, I think that's just a byproduct
I don't think they use that.
They don't say it in the movies, but like Jim Dale says Wizengamot. Yeah. I don't think it matters.
He says a lot of things.
Like bourgeois.
Canut.
And bourgeois.
Yeah, bourgeois.
Yeah. I love Jim Dale's just creative choices. Anything else that was omitted that we want to talk about?
Yes. Sir Michael Caine was not in this movie. But what character should Sir Michael Caine have played in the Harry Potter franchise?
Alfred Pennyworth.
Did you bring in a minute?
Yeah.
He's
Peeves. Can you imagine Michael Caine as Peeves?
I love it, honestly. Yeah.
That's okay.
I'm okay with it.
Okay. I'm thinking about the answer to your question. Let me go back to the Peeves thing real quick. I would have loved to have the moment later where Peeves, like, doesn't McGonagall tell Peeves that the, like, on one of the chandeliers?
Yeah.
He tells, she looks up and tells him that the screw goes the other way.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know how great it would have been if we would have just had, like, five movies of Peeves just doing minimal stuff, but then you just get to have the moment of Dame Maggie Smith, like, telling Peeves to, like, turn the screw the other way.
Yeah.
I'm sad that we, like, we don't get to see that because we just didn't establish Peeves in the first one. Michael Caine, who would Michael Caine play?
Dobby.
But just as Michael Caine.
Yes.
Like, with, like, prosthetic ears on.
Exactly.
Not even just his voice, but just, like...
Because
who did his voice? Is that Andy Serkis? I just assume if there's CGI that it's Andy Serkis.
I don't think it's Andy Serkis. I could be totally wrong.
It's not. It's not.
That would be shot. Oh, he's not. Is he British?
Andy Serkis?
Yeah.
Toby Jones. That makes sense.
Who's Toby Jones?
In the MCU,
okay.
He is,
losing me already.
Have you seen Captain America, the First Avenger?
Yeah.
No.
Red Skull's, like, side scientist.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Starts with a Z.
Xenomorph.
It's something, no, it's not like that, but it's.
It starts with an X, I'm pretty sure.
I can't remember what it is.
Xenon.
No, the 21st century.
Zelda.
Zola. Arnim Zola.
Oh, close.
Yeah.
Yeah, Toby Jones, which I didn't know. I just assume if I see a CGI, anything that has to have more than like 20 minutes of screen time, it's Andy Serkis.
I generally do, yeah.
Especially if it's a small, squatty creature.
Yeah.
Like Gollum or...
Yeah. Snoke.
Yeah.
Or
Ulysses.
King Kong.
Ulysses Claw. From, but that's like actually Andy Serkis. I'm still like gonna rack my brain about somebody that I want Michael Caine to appear as, like just retroactively. And I'm having to like go deeper into the other films just to like see if there's somebody that I would prefer. Also, like Ian McKellen's not in these, but simply because he chose to play Gandalf.
He wouldn't have been Dumbledore though, in my mind.
Oh, he would have been great. He would have been so good.
He was busy being Gandalf.
Yeah. They offered him the part. Like, he was offered the part.
Way better as Gandalf.
He was good offered choice. The part. I mean, Gandalf is amazing. I don't think saying Ian McKellen would be a good Dumbledore detracts from him being a good Gandalf. I think, if anything, it says Ian McKellen is so great at playing a wizard.
Well, I mean, I agree.
And J.K. Rowling clearly took Gandalf, copied and pasted, and said that's Dumbledore. Yeah.
In many ways, yeah.
But just gay.
Dumbledore's way nicer.
You know what? That makes sense. Because Ian McKellen is a gay man.
Oh.
So, retroactively, Dumbledore is a homosexual man. Gosh. Because now I'm just picturing...
Arthur Weasley?
That would be good. I just love that in... So the
Lupin!
In the live-action 101 Dalmatians film, the bad guys that work for Cruella De Vil to steal the puppies is Arthur Weasley and the house from Dr. House, Hugh Laurie.
Hugh Laurie.
Well, his name is Gregory House.
Yeah.
That's why you say Greg.
I've never seen it.
So. Well, yeah. Have you seen House?
Yes.
Yeah. So I always like, every time I see 101 Dalmatians, not that I see it a lot, but when I first saw it, I was like, it's Arthur Weasley
and Tony. 101 Dalmatians.
The live action adaptation with Glenn Close. What else? Is there anything that was omitted? My big thing was like the potions scene.
Yeah.
Everybody likes to talk about Peeves being omitted. We don't really need. There was too much Norbert in the books.
Yeah.
So the
fact
that we don't have to do that is nice.
Yeah. Only one Quidditch match, which is that is the standard for the movies. There will be one Quidditch match.
Cost too much money, man.
Yeah.
That's fact. Harry's strangely so good at Quidditch, despite us never seeing him, like, practice at all.
Yeah.
There wasn't even, like, the scene where they had him, like, chasing golf balls that Oliver Wood was throwing.
Yeah. I've always thought that was interesting, that, like, particularly in the movie, his ability to hold the hand over the broom and say up was so much better than everyone else's that you knew that he was going to be very good at flying. That seems very strange to me. These other kids are bad at saying the word up while holding their hand over a broom.
It's about feeling.
You have to say with feeling.
It's, you know, the Tenet thing, like you have to imagine the broom is already in your hand.
Maybe that's what it is.
You have to have dropped it.
Reverse chronology.
Also, just a little bit of trivia. There's the scene where Neville gets his remember all. A couple things about this. You mentioned earlier that Dean Thomas's one line is Neville got a remember all.
Yeah.
Dean wouldn't know what that is. He's a Muggleborn. Not necessarily. He's not just going to know, like Harry. Harry doesn't know what it is.
Okay.
Harry is just as connected. Dean Thomas is just as connected to the wizarding world as Harry Potter is.
Maybe Dean studied. He was like,
maybe. I also wish
I always stood by Harry was a bad student, and
I'm continuing it. That is interesting.
But anyway, real quick, remember all, Neville is holding it and it turns red because he's forgotten something, and he says, I can't remember what I've forgotten. He didn't have his robes on. That's what he forgot. So if you watch the movie again, and you've ever wondered, like, what is it that he's forgotten, it's because he's not wearing his robes that he needs to go to class. He's just in his sweater. Anyway. I caught Will right as he was yawning.
Oh, yeah. The books spend a decent amount of time, and this would be tough to put into a movie, but they spend a decent amount of time on classes and studying and homework in a way that the movies really don't.
Yeah. Especially this one.
You go to class only if there's a plot point that takes place during that class.
Mm-hmm.
So the amount of work they're putting in academically is just who is Nicholas Flamel in this movie.
Which is not their assignment.
Except from Hagrid, accidentally.
That would be like me going to English class in high school and I was supposed to read The Heart of Darkness and I'm like, hey, but I wrote this paper on Harry Potter, so like, it's pretty good, right? No.
I wish we would have gotten the scene in Potions class where he makes them prepare a draft to cure boils, but Neville's goes wrong and gets on everybody.
And melts everybody's shoes.
Yeah, but yeah. Like, I think it's one, either Crabbe or Goyle gets turned into, like, he gets a bunch of boils on him.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
We get a Trevor sighting. We have a Trevor the Toad sighting in this movie, which is great.
Yeah.
Evan has this uncanny ability to, so like, you know how you quote movies a lot? Just,
yeah.
The royal you, not just you, but like, you know, you quote movies.
Yeah.
Evan has this the knack to quote movies, but specifically like guttural noises. So we're watching.
What?
You'll know exactly where I'm going. We're watching the movie last night, and it's the sorting scene, and they drop the hat on. I don't know if it was Harry or if it was Ron. It's Ron.
Ah!
And so the first thing he does is
another Weasley. Ah,
I know exactly what to do with you, but like. The only part of that whole interchange that Evan quoted was the guttural noise that the sorting hat makes at the beginning. And then I think there was one more time, I can't remember the exact point, but Evan on at least two occasions did like, you know, because you'll be sitting with people and they'll like say the line before the line is said because they like the line or whatever. Evan did that with just a couple guttural noises. So Evan is just has a...
Oh, we didn't talk about the sorting hat. In the books...
We didn't get a song.
Which is really helpful, actually, in the books.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that we didn't get it. It's not.
Oh, thank goodness we didn't hear it.
I know, whatever, man.
In the book, all of the conversation is in the person's head.
It's not audible to the rest of the room.
In the movie, like, we as the audience can hear it, and you can see its mouth moving the whole time. And when Harry is like, "Don't put me in Slytherin," he's doing it
out loud.
Out loud, which like obviously makes more sense for a movie, but it gives the impression in the movie that the whole room is seeing Harry go, "I don't want to be in Slytherin." And then the hat going,
not Slytherin,
hey, not Slytherin.
Huh? Not Slytherin, eh? Yeah, so, like, I don't know if that's just they didn't want to do the in-the-head thing and make it a little reverby.
Tough to do.
Or if it was just, like, but the thing is I think if it was intended to be, like, an audible-to-the-room thing, none of the people in the room react to it.
That's true.
And, like, later, Snape could have been, like, you know, I'm sure if that would have been an audible thing to the rest of the room, Snape would have, like, obviously mentioned something about probably, like, why didn't you want to be in Slytherin, you brat, or whatever, something like that. But also, like, you know, the sorting hat's not supposed to be, like, a worrying thing. And I think it would be very worrying. It was, like, you have to sit there and let everybody hear what's going on in your head because the sorting hat's reading your mind.
Yeah.
So I interpreted, I guess, when we talked about it last night as, like, it is literally happening inside his head, but we are seeing it as, like, an audible conversation.
Yeah. I think you're right.
I think it's accurate.
Yeah. So.
But it does appear that he is speaking out loud to the entire audience, and in which case, of course, the Slytherins hate him. Yeah.
So, anything else? I have one final question.
Yep.
We'll wrap it up with. But is there anything else that was omitted, like, dislike?
The snake doesn't say amigo.
It doesn't. It just says thanks.
Yeah, that's great.
Which I'm very thankful for. Also, he asks him if he's from Burma in the movie, but in the film or in the book, it's Brazil.
Yeah.
But
I don't
know
why they changed that.
Because he's a Burmese python.
I mean, I guess. Why couldn't they just made it a Brazilian python?
He would have been an anaconda.
He would have been a boa constrictor or something.
What, anaconda?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know whether maybe they had
a change.
Maybe the country of Burma like paid that because like some
the tourism board of Burma.
That's what I'm saying. The tourism board will sometimes pay money to have their country name dropped in a film, like in Mission Impossible: Ghost Protocol. Like a lot of that took place in the United Arab Emirates, and I think they fronted like a large sum of money to have it, like a big action scene happen on the Burj Khalifa. Anyway, so yeah, he says he doesn't say thanks, amigo, which I'm like very thankful for because that is just so cheesy and awful.
Yeah.
And honestly, irredeemable. However,
but my... The glass.
Yeah, the glass is different. So, like, in the book, the glass just disappears and the snake slithers out toward Dudley. And so Dudley's bothered by that. But in the movie, he falls in the enclosure and then the glass reappears. Which I discussed last night was, like, Dudley was freaking out. But it's honestly not a worrying situation. Because the thing in there the thing that was dangerous that's in there is now gone. And obviously, they don't just, like, build the enclosure, put the snake in and then cement it shut. There's a door that they have to feed the snake with. So there's just, it's as easy as a janitor going to get a key and unlocking the back of the enclosure.
So what I'm saying is Dudley's an idiot.
Well, we knew that. Yeah. This is evidence. Hey, Evan, what day is tomorrow?
Sunday.
Is there any mail that runs on Sunday?
I don't know about mail, but there's no post on Sunday.
Post on Sunday. And back to the Vernon Dudley is amazing. So my final question, because I want us to do this for every movie we watch.
Okay.
I want you to give it a rating. 1 to 10 lightning bolts. we'll each give it a score out of 10, and then we'll just like do a conglomeration of the three, and then mathematically do like an average score of the three of us, and we'll keep track of it.
What are you imagining as the, like, biggest component of my rating? Like, authenticity of the book,
factor,
how much I
yeah,
liked
factor
it,
in,
how good
factor,
the movie it was.
Yeah, factor in,
all the above?
Like, yeah, factor in, I know that's tough.
No.
But just, like, factor in, try to give it an objective rating as far as its trueness to the book or its success in telling its story or those kinds of things.
Okay.
And don't get, this is one of those things, it's like, this is the first movie, and I think we would all agree it's not the best movie. So, like, don't give it too high of a rating, because then when you get to the actual, like, best films, you're going to be having to give them all, like, 10 lightning bolts. So, out of 10 lightning bolts, is anybody, like, ready to make that pronunciation? Or, it doesn't have to be lightning bolt. Do you want a different metric? Is there a different item from the Harry Potter universe that you'd like to measure it by?
How many Hedwigs?
How many Deadwigs?
Trevor the Toads. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, last night we were watching the movie, and Evan goes, hey, there's Hedwig. And Will goes, yeah, more like Deadwig.
Sorry, listeners. Hope you know about that.
Well, it's 2021. They know he's dead. She's dead. Excuse me.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm ready.
Let's do Trevor the Toads. Okay, how many Trevor the Toads out of 10?
Trevor Sewell the Toads.
How many Trevors do you give this movie out of 10? You don't have to say it on three. Yeah, we'll just go around the couch in the order that we're sitting.
This is probably higher than you guys are going to rate it, but I'll give it an 8.
I will give it a 7.
I'm also giving it an 8.
Woo! Let's go!
I just, as a teaser for future episodes, my ratings after movie 3 are probably not going to break a 6.
Yikers. That hurts me.
I would say mine go down significantly. Yeah.
Because the books just get too long for the movie format after that.
I
think this is probably the second best movie. In my opinion.
Yeah, second or third. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the aggregate score is a 7.67.
Cool.
Yeah.
So it got a 77 out of 100 Trevor the Toads.
It's pretty good.
Not a bad, not a bad rotten Trevor score, Rotten pretty Tomatoes. Good. So that's the conclusion of our movie, not necessarily review, but just discussion. So the next time you hear from us, we'll be discussing chapters 1 and 2 of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, the favorite of one William Walker.
Hey, that's me.
So we'll get into something that will, I'm sure we'll have a long...
Heaven is just booing me.
It'll be a recurring theme
everything
of,
you stand for.
Of Will explaining why it's his favorite book, I'm sure.
And us
explaining and Evan why and I trying not. To tear it down. You know, Will say things like, you know, it's like if the Hardy Boys was magical. Things like that.
I'm already laughing at it.
Yeah, so...
There's going to be a lot more arguing next season.
Yeah.
Get ready.
So that's the end of season one. We had 11 episodes. Obviously, the books, as we go on, the books get longer, so you'll just be more entitled to more Slug Club Radio, which I know you're excited
Congratulations,
about.
Congratulations, everyone.
Congratulations to you. You've gotten through... If you've listened to all the episodes, you've officially gotten through the least you're going to hear of us from each episode. In just the same format, we'll be doing an episode with two chapters or so. If you know, when we get to Order of the Phoenix, we might have to do like three chapters just to, yeah. But it's going to be a lot. So once next time you hear from us, we'll be talking about chapters 1 and 2 of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. Same thing, different day, different book. If you are listening to this, thank you so much for listening. If you feel so inclined, please go onto iTunes and give us a rating of 5 stars, and you can say something nice if you want. We won't read it. It's all good. But you can follow us there or subscribe, whatever their you know, option is. You can also find us on Spotify and Google Podcasts and subscribe or follow there as well. If you want to share it with somebody you know, somebody you love, we would appreciate that as well. We are always open to having more people listen. We're not just making this for us. We do enjoy it, and if nobody listened to it, I think we'd still get together and make it. But it always helps to have more people listen to it and enjoy it. So if you would, share it with somebody you know that might be interested in Harry Potter or just us talking about John Legend's Versace kimono. I don't have anything else.
That's going to be the title of this podcast.
Versace kimono.
Versace kimono. Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah, so I retroactively figure out our episode titles. I hit a snag around episode 9, so episode 9 of this season was just called This is the 9th episode of Slug Club Radio. But we've had some luck since then and before then. So, yeah, thank you for listening. This has been Versace Kimono. We'll see you next book and next year with Chamber of Secrets.
Do, 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 do. Do 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 do.
Bring it on.
Do 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 do.
Fell a little short on that last note. All right, love you guys. Bye.